Vinnie White Show on In-Depth Radio, News Talk 1010.
Yes! I forgot how to turn the microphone on. Hello, good evening, how are you? It's Vinnie White, it's 9:06-ish Eastern Standard Time, live and direct from the majesty of Toronto, or as you have to call it if you live here. I had to put the enunciation back in because I've been away and people say where you're from, which is always a nightmare when you are from somewhere and live in someone else's country because you have to tell your entire life story. So usually I just said I'm from London and forgot to mention the fact I lived in Canada. Just, it gets boring. It gets boring. But sometimes I'd have to say I'm from London, but I live in Toronto. But if you're talking to a Canadian, you say I'm from London, but I live in... good evening. It's nice to be here. I think I know where I am. I don't really know entirely. I've got a bit of jet lag. I'm slightly lost and I haven't planned the radio show. So same crap as every week. I'm on till 10 and you can get involved in the show and I would encourage it. 416-872-1010 or you can do Star Talk 8255 on your cell phone. Jolly clever stuff that is. You can call toll free. Is this new? Was that there before? We've always had this. I've never read that out before. Well, apparently, if times are hard, you can call toll-free on 877-518-5151. It's not very good, is it? You'd think that we'd buy 877-something-1010. Rubbish. Don't worry about the toll-free. I'll say go against it. We haven't even made a good effort to get a proper number. Pay for the call. Show us a thing or two. And you can text the number, which is jolly clever, 71010. See what we did there. So once again, all that fairly fundamentally uninteresting information is phone the phone number 416-872-1010, Star Talk 8255, text 71010. Then there's Facebook, of course, if you're interested in that. My name is Vinnie White, and it's spelled V-I-N-N-E-Y, White. This show will get better in a minute when I've finished all the housekeeping. What else is there? Oh, you can tweet or follow me on Twitter. At Vinnie White, V-I-N-N-E-Y, White. Is that it? That'll do. You can scale the building and press your butt cheeks against the window. It'll give us a giggle. And nowadays, you'd probably get away with it. A month ago, you'd have got stuck there, you know? And there's it's bad enough when you sit on a photocopier, but when you've got your ass pressed up against some windows and it all freezes, terribly embarrassing. Take it from me. That's why I got expelled from England. So I'm back and I suppose we should do some sort of a radio show. I should also tell you where I've been. I hope this isn't going to be a terrible mantra of me banging on about me. I'm not going to, you know, do it's not like I'm going to sit you down and show you a slideshow of my travels. But I would like to explain how it went. Some people are interested. I went away because I decided it would be a good idea to branch slightly off radio and get a bit into TV. And I took it upon myself to go to Nicaragua and develop a TV show, or at least a pilot for a TV show. And now I can spill the beans about it all. It's going to be called The Life Lottery. And the concept is that I get posted in a random place around the world. That's what I really want, once the Discovery Channel have bought it, paid for it, and decided to put me up in five-star hotels. Yes, please. So if you're listening from the Discovery Channel, can I just say that you have fundamentally one of the best channels in the world. And I'm really quite cheap, and I'm jolly good, and... if you really want, I can do this. I can talk like this. I know it's not right, but I've been working on it a lot because I've been traveling with a lot of Americans, a lot of Canadians, and I know that I'm going to stick out like a sore thumb. And if you need me to, I will do anything for you. All right? I don't want to sound desperate, but if that involves sexual acts, I will do it to get a TV show. All right? That didn't sound desperate. So, yeah, once it's made in about 6 months, the show is going to be something like this. The Life Lottery starts with me in a studio, and then we come up with a random way to put me somewhere. So you could put a dartboard and just throw a dart at a world map, and it picks a place. And then I go to that place, and I have to find someone to help. And in doing that, I also, hopefully, deliver some information on the country, and not just sort of boring stuff of, oh, isn't it got nice beaches? I also look somewhat into the economy, the political situation, the stability, what people want, what people love. And then through all of that, I hope to find loads of expats that are running charities in that place. And then I get talking to them, and they push me on to someone that they believe is a special case that I can help in some way, shape or form. And that was the pilot. And that's what I did, which sounds rather ambitious. And it was only when I got there and bought a motorbike and started driving down the road with some camera equipment that I'd frankly never really used, that I realised that it might actually be rather stupid. And it took probably about 2 weeks of, frankly, disasters and just real lack of confidence in myself at the beginning to get through that, to make something. And because it's hard, man. I didn't realise how hard it was when you're on your own. And I had a friend that came out to help me, Johnny Boy. Thanks, Johnny Boy. You were a lifesaver in every respect. And we did some filming together. And then it just sort of clicked. I had, at that point, met lots of people from all over the country. And a lot of people wanted to get involved in the project. So I was looking for a translator. I checked into a hostel. The guy on the desk was looking for translation work. So we used him. I was looking for film crew. There was a film school nearby the village that I was working in, or trying to work in, that wanted to film. So they helped film it, you know. And it was a real nightmare at first to get all these people and the concept together. But after a couple of weeks, I think it went pretty well. It went all right, you know. It was definitely an eye-opener. I'd say, in conclusion, the last 7 weeks have been certainly the most exciting weeks of my life. It was a riveting, and I say it's very difficult to be sincere when you're British because you always sound sarcastic, but I'm going to attempt to be sincere. You might want to record this and use it as a ringtone because it doesn't happen often. It was a mind-bogglingly unique and wonderfully deep experience, the whole affair. And I learned that apparently not being selfish and helping other people is actually far more rewarding than all the crap that we collect on a daily basis. And I'd like to share that message with you. Not in a sort of, you know, Bible-bashing Christian kind of, oh, look at me, aren't I a changed person, you should change with me. But I genuinely believe that actually, having travelled around a bit and just not spent a lot of money on myself and just bummed around with lots of people that are very impoverished and poor, that we have got our balance incredibly wrong here in North America and Europe, and that we do spend an awful lot of time pissing around, drinking expensive whiskey and trying to impress other people, when actually all you really need is a roof over your head and a good couple of belly laughs every day. And that's hopefully what will come out in the filming. I hope. But it's going to be, as I say, about 6 months till it's made. So I look forward to it very much. The way that I found this subject, the person that I was helping, I spoke to various charities that are working on the ground there, NGOs, so that's non-profit, you know, non-governmental organisations, not-for-profits, that are working on the ground to try and help communities. Now, Nicaragua is, I think it's the second poorest country in the Americas after Haiti. And if you go to like one of the resorts on the beach, you'd think, shut up, it's amazing. Like, I could eat lobster every night. Well, that's not really Nicaragua, is it? As is often the case with these places. So hopefully the film really gets under the skin of what it is, because I lived in a little fishing village with 1,500 people, not in one room. That would be tricky. And it was really off the tourist map. It was really beautiful because it was on the beach, as you would expect from a fishing village. It's very rarely you find one up a volcano. But it was extremely beautiful, and it had a real sort of soul to itself, a real kind of beauty of its own. So I would like to say it's always the same, really. I travel the world, and I know I'm a very lucky man to say that, but I conclude the same things. And I believe that there's very little to be learnt from rich countries. I don't care for Panama or South Africa as much as I do Nicaragua or Tanzania. The level of sheer joy in people that dwell in what are purported to be unsafe and poor countries with little to call their own is often overwhelming, isn't it? You know, and quite often, if you were to read the American government websites on the safety in Nicaragua, you'd never go. You'd think it was hell on earth and everyone's shooting each other. It's not. It's really not unsafe at all. There's many nights that I was walking around mildly drunk with my wallet in my pocket in a village, knowing fully well that I was far safer there than I would be on the streets of Toronto, which, by the way, is a safe city. So, a real eye-opener. And I think we should learn from them. And I really do mean that. If there was a unit of happiness, Nicaragua would have far more per capita than the USA or Canada. But for some stupid reason, we all tend to look at GDP. And think that that's very important, and it isn't. A few days after I left, I was headed to some more rich countries. I went after Nicaragua, I went down to Costa Rica and then into Panama, which are doing very well for themselves, thank you very much. And when I got in a taxi, I hope this story sort of sums it all up, really. I got in a taxi to leave, and in Nicaragua, the cars, you'd be lucky if it's got four wheels. you know, there's if it's got a fender, you've got, that's a Rolls Royce down there, I'll tell you. And you can feel the bumps. Let me just say, it might not be the health and safety that you get around here. You know what I'm saying? So I get in this scrappy old car and there's a guy, an over-animated cabbie, who says he'll drive me to the border. And I say to him, you know, how much is it? Because you have to agree up front. There's certainly no meters in the cab. So you agree up front. He said, I'll do it for $20. It's not bad for nearly an hour's drive. And so I say, all right, yeah, $20 will do. And we start moving on. And I just remembered as we were leaving town that I'd left all my laundry in a little shack and I had to pick it up. So I said, we're actually sort of outside town. I said to him, listen, sorry about this, it's a bit embarrassing, but I'm leaving. As you know, I'm going to the border. I'm not coming back to Nicaragua. I've just remembered I've got my laundry in a little shack. Do you mind doing a Yui and we'll go and pick it up? He says, yeah, no worries. So we go back there and it's all locked up. And I'm thinking, oh, it's Sunday, isn't it? So I've got 5 pairs of boxer shorts and almost 2 shirts. I'm down to my last T-shirt, which is looking pretty ropey. And I'm thinking, oh, that's a shame, isn't it? So I said, never mind, I can't hang around. I'll just have to leave it. One day I'll go back to Nicaragua and pick up my boxer shorts. It's nice to know that you've got a safe, clean pair of pants in what can be an unsafe country. You never know when you might need them. If, for example, you're listening to this in Nicaragua on a podcast or something like that, and you've had an accident, give us a shout. Gabby's Laundry, San Juan del Sur. Say Vinny's the name. And pick up a pair of pants on me. So I said to him, never mind, we'll move on. And we start driving to the border. So my Spanish isn't very good. And I was trying to tell him, I said, I'll get a couple of T-shirts in Costa Rica. And he says, oh, you don't really want to do that. They're expensive there. And it seems a bit of a sort of moot conversation because I'm clearly not going to buy any now. We're on what they would call a highway, what we would call a death trap. And I'm on my way to the border. And he says, don't buy T-shirts in Costa Rica. They're really expensive. And I say, well, there's not much I can do now. He goes, well, are you in a rush? I say, no, not at all. I stopped being in a rush about 4 weeks ago when I got into the loop of living in a hot country. And he says, well, don't worry about it. We'll go back to town. So for free, he drives me back to town, takes me to the market, gets out of his cab, comes in with me, helps me try on T-shirts, has a giggle with the woman that's running the store, or the shack, if you like. And they're both having a giggle at my horrific fashion taste, which, by the way, doesn't get any better in Central America. And we have a laugh. And I'm thinking, I don't remember this happening in the Western world. So I'm with this guy. He's my new buddy. We're heading back to the border. He's burnt up so much fuel now that he has to stop at the gas station. So I buy him a couple of cans of Fanta. So we're driving along. I've got my new mate. We're having a can of Fanta. There's clucking chickens. There's happy kids playing in the sun. And I'm thinking, this is life. This is the business. And that is the difference. I don't know quite what that long, rambling, warped, twisted tale was. But I think what I'm trying to say is it was disappointing for me when I came back and went out on a bar on King Street, which was a foolish choice after living in a very different country, to go right deep into the underbelly of the Western world. And I was with a friend of mine who spent $120 on whiskies. Yeah, and that was 6 whiskies. $20 a go. And I just thought, oh, we've got it wrong. It's not right. So I think my moral of the story is, if you're feeling a bit sad at the moment, the best thing you can do is stop spending money on frivolous bollocks that you'll never need, save it up, put it away, and head to Nicaragua or a similar country where you can live simply and cheaply with good people that appreciate the quality of life. And I hope that that comes out in the film. All right. Good. Long old rant, wasn't it? A lot of people aren't used to the accent, are they? Because I've been away. Who was the fella that was replacing me, Elliot?
So David Eddy.
What does he sound like?
He sounds quite Canadian.
Does he? Yeah. Could be quite jarring, this, for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Don't know what to do about it. Maybe we'll do a clip. I'd like to ask you a question, actually, and I'd like you to call in 416-872-1010. I want your worst airport experience. And I'll tell you why I'm asking this, because I don't know what it is with the Americans. God bless you. You're a lovely bunch and all that. And I met some fantastic Yanks. But for some reason, they believe that everyone wants to live in their country. Now, I don't understand why, if I'm going from, in this case, Panama to Miami, Miami to Toronto, I don't even know why I've got to bother going through customs halfway anyway. So if you can explain that to me, I'd like to know. Because I don't want to leave the airport. I have no interest in going out picking up my bag, going back through customs for no reason whatsoever. And I don't want to leave the airport. And because of the system and the way it is, and because I have to theoretically, you know, go leave airside, as they call it, leave the, you know, the airside, I don't know what else to call it, I have to go through all the questions, which usually involve them saying, why do you want to work in America? I don't! If I wanted to work in the United States of America, this broadcast would be coming from the United States of America. It's as simple as that. I have absolutely no interest in moving there whatsoever. I'm fine with it here, as long as I get away every winter. I hear it's been awful. Sorry about that. But yeah, so I've got pretty much everything but the rubber gloves. Again, I don't know what it is. Next time I'm spending the money. I'm not going through the States. Because they... Do I look criminal? Is it because every American movie has had a guy with a British accent saying, oh, you've deliberately disobeyed me. We will take you down. Is it because they've been grown up on that, that I look like some satanic moron that's about to kill everyone? Because that's how I was treated. And I know they've got to do their job, but my goodness. Honestly, millimetres away from the rubber gloves. Everything was checked. And he said, how long are you going to be working here to try and trip me up? I said, if you look at the ticket in my hand, the flight leaves in 2 hours. You're more than welcome to sit with me all the way through and check I don't run out and try to immigrate to Florida, which is Beelzebub's back garden, by the way. A lot of it is awful, isn't it, Florida? Talk about garish. I mean, if I was going to move to the States, I think I always feel I'd be more at home in New Orleans, which is a bit more lawless and drunkard, which is a terrible reflection on me. So there you go. So I'd like to know, is it just me? And do you Canadians get it any easier? Because I have to get my photograph taken. I have to get my fingerprints done. I'm not making this up. And I have no previous convictions, by the way, in any country. They've never caught me on anything. So I just want to know if you have a bit of a nightmare at customs too. Or is it my face? And are the American ones worse than the Canadian ones? Because I feel like they are. I always get quite a nice service when I come to Canada. I mean, I am a resident and all that, but I don't know. I find the American Customs Office, is it Borderland Security? Homeland Security, isn't it?
Yes, Homeland Security. Sense, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what they do. Their first day of training, they must show them horror videos and say, can you emulate every evil person in it? Because don't for the love of God try a gag. Oh, sweet baby. They're not known for humour. I reckon in history, 0.0% of border guards have crossed over into stand-up comedy. I am willing to put my house on that. So 416-872-1010. Is it me? Is it my ugly face? Do I look suspect? Or do you get a hard time when you go through the States? That's what I'd like to know. We'll take your calls in a minute when we come back from a break. But 416-872-1010.
You're tuned in to The Vinny White Show on In-Depth Radio, News Talk 1010.
I stuck on Facebook. I said, what's your worst airport experience? First comment from Deborah, Israel 1992. Can you give us a bit more detail? And then Tracy says, oh, it's a tie between Atlanta and Montreal for the worst airport. No justification why, but there you go. I'd like to know if it's just me that looks suspicious. Or do you get a hard time from US Customs? I think you get it easier, don't you, as Canadians? You don't have to get your fingerprints done, do you?
I've never had that myself.
No. You're a bald man. Do you have to press your head against anything? Or?
That would be great.
Is there a head print on a bald man?
That'd be great.
Mohammed called in. He called in on the number 416-872-1010. Hello, Mohammed.
Hey, Vinny. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, mate. You?
Welcome back. I came about 10 days ago from Libya. Speaking of like simple life and happy life, I enjoyed every single minute.
Oh, I'm very pleased to hear it. What were you doing there?
I didn't see my dad for 22 years, so I went and saw him.
Ah.
And I was just overwhelmed with the warmth and the simplicity of life. And every single minute of their life is an enjoyable moment, social. They work till the work hours are over and then just assembled in families and just having fun and dinners every night with together.
Isn't it a bit lawless there, post-Gaddafi?
It's a lot better. There's a lot of lawlessness.
Mm.
But I think people are maybe misusing these first 3 years of freedom.
I see, yeah.
There is some lawlessness and people like don't stop, say, at traffic lights and stuff like that.
Did you have a bit of a nightmare in the airport on the way back? Because a man called Mohammed that's gone from Libya, I'm not sure that you're going to make it through without a nice pat on the back.
Well, on the way back, I traveled to Turkey and stayed over there, and I traveled to England as well for a night in London. It was a beautiful city. I loved it a lot, better than Toronto.
No comment.
And my daughter would be in the car. And then at the airport, they pulled me out of the whole plane and ripped my bags to pieces. And everything, when he was asking me, he kept writing the stuff down.
Well, where were you exactly at this point?
In Toronto.
Yeah, in Toronto, okay. So you didn't go through the States, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I came everybody gets an okay on their that declaration.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got 77. I said, whoa, I'm special.
Which is the code word for, I think he's a terrorist, yeah.
He goes, open, and I said, walk here, sir. I walked in. He goes, open the bag. I said, okay, sure, open them up. He ripped everything to pieces.
Yeah.
And I told him to put them back together by myself. Didn't even say sorry or what the reason was.
But then, you know, I'm trying to be a bit more liberal here. It's not really up to them to apologise, is it? I mean, they are just doing a job, and there has been an enormous amount of terrorism on the rise over the last couple of decades. So should they really need to explain why they did it?
Well, I think, no, because every single luggage goes through scanners, right?
Yeah.
And then the scanners found nothing, and he found manually nothing. I think, didn't they think they owe me an apology? I mean, I think it's more profiling than anything else, and I'm for the first time flying in 10 years.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it wouldn't hurt to say I'm sorry for the inconvenience, but we have to do this. I don't think that would be that bad.
Well, at least say welcome home. That maybe will take the heat away.
I'll tell you what, mate. Your experience was nothing compared to mine every time I go through the States. I swear they've got something on my file about something that I've done there once that I can't remember when I was drunk. I wonder if they recorded me going to the toilet in that car park in Stowe. Yeah, go on.
What I heard is, most of the American border guards never traveled out of the USA, and they think everybody wants to come and live there.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I think they've been programmed to believe that everyone's desperately trying to get in. I have absolutely no interest in living in the States whatsoever.
No, I have never been to the USA, and I've been for 20 years in Canada. Not once. I don't even want to go there.
Good evening, America, if you're listening. Thanks, Mohammed. Let's join Lynn now, who called in on 416-872-1010. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. It's good to be back. How are you?
Fine, thank you. I missed you.
I thought about you every day, Lynn, and I've never even met you, but just the idea of you keeps me going.
Oh, you're so sweet. Okay, so, well, it wasn't in the U.S., it was in Calgary, flying from Calgary to Toronto. I have white hair. I am a grandmother, and didn't look in any way like I could be a terrorist, although some of the other passengers could have been by the looks of them. However, they randomly, I guess, chose me to search everything.
Not your cavities.
No.
Thankfully.
Thank God.
I don't think they're allowed up there unless they've got enormous amounts of suspicion and reason.
Oh, boy.
So to speak. How old are you, Lynn?
64.
And what did they go through?
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the girl, At first, when she stopped me, she had a big smirk on her face. She said, "This is your lucky day." That's how she announced to me that I was the chosen one.
Nothing like a bit of condescending and mildly patronizing irony.
Very young girl, yeah. You know, and I'm looking like a grandma. Oh, it was awful. Just awful.
Well, I'm glad you made it through, Lynn.
Me too.
Take care, darling.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Cheers. I'm getting the overwhelming suspicion that people are getting an easier job than me, though. He pretty much pulled his gun on me. The worst time I ever had, actually, was when I lived in Ottawa, and I wasn't even a resident of this country. I was just visiting it for a very long time. And so I looked a bit suspect, and I went to the States, and I was wearing, it was in George Bush II's reign, and I had a picture of George Bush on my T-shirt that said, "The world's biggest terrorist." Apparently, that wasn't a good fashion choice for the border. He's the guy that he forced me to go and get some money because I had to pay $8 and he wouldn't take $10 Canadian, which was more than enough. You have to pay in American. So he forced me to the duty free store to go and get some money from the cash point and or the ATM, whatever. And then I come back over the road and he said, "You can't cross the road there." But he told me that once I'd already crossed back. So honestly, I was burning up inside. You wouldn't believe what he did. He walked me back across the road and then showed me where I should cross the road, thereby tripling the chance of me having an accident in the car with the cars that are crossing. And I'm fairly confident at my ripe old age, despite my mild stupidity, that I am capable of crossing a road. So he basically treated me like a kid, and I sort of lost it. And I said, he said, can I take your fingerprints? And I said, is it obligatory? And he said, do you mean mandatory? And I said, yes, because that's another word for it. And he pulled his gun out. And I thought, right, this is it, lads. The lights are going out. And he did that thing, because you can't pull a gun on a guy when he's just being a patronising git, even when he's as pompous as me. But he did that thing where he pretended to change his from one holster to the other. So if I'd have said he pulled a gun on me, it wouldn't have got away with it. But that was a little bit of poo came out on that one. Definitely a fart. And I hope you enjoyed it. Hello, Arthur.
And how are you?
I'm all right, mate. Yeah. What's your story?
Well, my problem wasn't not necessarily with border security or anything like that. It was specifically the airline.
Mm.
And it was an airline that was down under.
Mm.
And we won't say the name of the airline, but it was...
Does it rhyme with Wantus?
No, actually, they were actually the best.
I don't know any other down under
airline.
Well, just say
that he seems to be in love, or the British love him so much, and he's knighted there.
Oh, is he? Is it? Does it rhyme with Virgin?
No, it's like that city in Missouri, Brandon or something like that. Branson.
Yeah, so it is Virgin. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Over, yes.
We've just done it now. Look, let's just... I don't think we're going to worry about it. The fact is, you were flying Virgin. What happened?
And my issue was, is that I rode all over Australia, Qantas, and so forth with a didgeridoo, and which was carry-on luggage, and they wanted me to pack it away.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, I had already incidents already where they damaged some other stuff, and I said I wasn't going to do it away, put it away.
Mm.
So we ended up getting in a scuffle.
Well, when a man won't put his didgeridoo away.
Well, you know, you go all the way to Australia, you want to make sure it comes back.
I'm glad you called. Thank you, Arthur.
Bye.
See you later. Didgeridoo, by the way, and I'm sure everyone knows, don't they? Does everyone know what that is? I feel like I should explain it, but I also feel slightly patronising by explaining it. I'll half explain it, and that'll do. That's all you're getting. That's all you're getting. All right, so... You know what happened to me, actually, if I may tell you a wee story. I decided it would be a good idea when I was in Nicaragua, and the film will be out in 6 months, and you'll learn all about these wonderful adventures. And I'll let you know more about it as it's being edited. But the way that I drove around was on a motorbike, which I still own, actually. I own a bag of laundry and a motorbike in Nicaragua. I never managed to sell it, so I left it with someone I met, and I said I'll come back one day and ride it again. It was only $400. And believe me, it was worth less than that because it was falling apart. But it was a good way of getting around in what could be described as a somewhat dangerous country. There are rules of riding motorbikes that you have to set yourself. Never, ever ride at night because there's dogs in the street, potholes, and enormous amounts of drunk drivers. Try and keep your distance from the car in front because you might think that you're nice and tucked in behind it, but all of a sudden a massive hole comes along and it's goodnight, sweetheart. And a few other rules are just keeping it safe. Don't drink anything ever, even though you easily could if you wanted to, and it's quite tempting. It really isn't a great idea to ride a bike drunk, and even though that everyone else does, why not put a helmet on? Go crazy. Know what I mean? So I was obeying these sort of self-set rules. But I did want to take a bit of an adventure, and I went from a place up in the sort of north coast, and the guy whose hostel I was staying in said that I could ride all the way to the south, almost 100 kilometres along the beach. Oh, sweet baby, Jesus, what gets better than that? In the waves, bag on the back, feeling of freedom, me, the bike, here we go. So I set off, and what I found out is that if you ride along a beach on a motorcycle, it's quite difficult to ride on the soft sand, and it's very difficult to know which bit's soft and which bit's not. And weirdly, the closer you are to the water of the ocean, the Pacific Ocean, a reasonably sized ocean by all accounts, one definitely big enough to swallow a man and a motorbike, if you ride along the waves, not only is it beautifully exhilarating and fantastically cooling as you go jetting down through the across the beach, but also it's actually slightly safer because the sand is a bit harder. So I was riding along in the sort of very just lapping up the waves, and I had a smile on me like a Cheshire cat. And it was a beautiful moment as the wind went through my hair, despite having a helmet on. And everything was looking good. And the world was my oyster. And I felt pretty much as if I could achieve anything. And it was at that point that I hit a soft patch of sand. Now, when you hit a soft patch of sand, the bike sort of steers itself, you see. And it started steering itself in a way. It would be nice if it was steering away from the ocean, but it sort of steered into the ocean. At which point I thought, well, if you stop, you'll sink because it's like quicksand. So I'll increase the speed, as I've been told by all bikers. If you're in trouble, increase the speed. Logic. So I dropped the hammer and cogged it down and gave it big bananas and decided it would be a good idea to just edge slightly more into the water for that firmer sand. So that quicksand grabbed me and took me further into the water and further into the water until an enormous wave came up and actually knocked me and my bike over, all my worldly belongings, including a $1,500 camera and a laptop, into the sea. And it was at this point, because I'd already gone quite a long way, that there was only one lone man on the beach who happened to be German and spoke English and came over to me and said, "Did you mean to do this?" Which has to be the best line for understated coolness when you're witnessing a man desperately trying to hike everything he owns and a bike that is rapidly filling up with water through the exhaust pipe out of the ocean. And I said, because I've always got time for a bit of condescending sarcasm, "Does it look like I meant to do this? Do I look borderline suicidal in the sense that I just might choose to ride into an ocean?" And he said, "No, would you want a hand and help me out?" So thank you very much to the random German that saved my bike and managed to really assist me in my time of need, and everyone else that helped me when I had any minor accidents, which was pretty much every day. 416-872-1010, tell me your travel stories. Peter.
Hey, Vinny.
Hello, mate.
So I'm going to Michigan for my annual May 24th Victoria Day golf vacation with my buddy. So we're crossing from Sarnia to Port Huron.
Mm.
And we get to the border, and it's usually pretty uneventful. And the border crossing guard goes through his spiel, and then he says, "Any alcohol or tobacco?" And I kind of hit myself on the forehead and I say, "Oh, damn, I put some Cuban cigars in my bag," not thinking about all the issues between Cuba and the USA.
Yeah, they're banned there, aren't they?
Yeah, so
contraband.
I tell him, I say, "You know what? I just, when you said that, I realized I've got some Cuban cigars," and it's a Green Hornet that's in the booth. And he looks at me very concerned and starts giving me a bit of a lecture and tells me he has to send me inside to talk to a manager. I'm getting a little bit worried. I go inside, and a very stern, almost like state trooper-like custom agent comes up to me, takes the bag of cigars that I have, and actually, an interesting thing is he holds them up to his nose and draws them across like a cigar connoisseur.
Why? Why would you do that? Well, to check that they're Cuban, even though they've got Cuban great written on them.
The rest of the story will answer that question, but
okay.
He's very, very stern.
Yeah.
So he basically goes into a diatribe for 5 minutes about how Cuba is an enemy of the USA, yeah, and this is contraband and it's illegal, and don't you understand, Canada and the U.S. are friends, but there's certain things you can't do. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I wouldn't have done it if I'd really thought about it, but I'm just packing for a golf trip, and we want to smoke a cigar on the first tee, and I'm sorry, that's why I declared it. The guy said it, so this is really funny. So He says to me, "Okay, Peter," he goes, "I'll make a deal with you here. I will let you take these across the border into the USA." And I'm thinking, okay, that's great. Mm. He goes, "But you have to promise me you will destroy them when you get to your destination." And I'm, okay, I'll destroy them, I promise. And he looks at me with a smile and goes, "I recommend you burn them."
I love him. There's good people on that border. That's good to hear.
See, you know what? You're getting nothing but bad stories. And I will tell you another great story I had at Canada Customs about a week ago. I was returning from 9 days in Europe, Central Europe. And it was basically, we were in 10 cities in 9 days.
Whoa.
And my head was spinning. We drank so much. We were being entertained the whole time. And I'm carrying my ski bag and my business bag and my clothes bag, and I'm getting off the plane, and they got this new system where you put your passport into the computer.
Yeah, I've used it. It's quite good, actually. Yeah. It speeds things up, yeah.
And I was so I put my stuff through, and I've got the piece of paper, and I walk up to the guy at the before you get out, and it's a young guy, and he looks at me, and he goes, What was your last destination? And like my head is spinning, and I guess it didn't help that I probably had three or four of those little bottles of wine on the plane.
Good boy.
What's your last destination? And I looked at him. I'm thinking, I've been in so many places to myself. I can't even remember where I came from. And I look at him and go, you know what? This is the stupidest answer, but I can't even remember where I came from. And he looks at me and he gives me my passport back and he goes, "Welcome back to Canada, Peter."
Nice.
Yeah. So I've had some good experiences.
God bless them. Oh, they're all right. The Toronto guys, they're all right. Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot, Peter.
Nice talking to you.
Take care. See, they're only human, apart from the American ones, which are robots. Fact. 9:43 is your time. I think I've got to do a break, have I? And I might pop off and get a quick cup of tea just to fill in the stereotype. And I'll be back in a minute. Hang around. I'd say it's worth it, but I'm biased. Give it a shot.
This is the Vinny White Show on In-Depth Radio, News Talk 1010.
Yeah, it is. It's good to be back. It really is. I've got a feeling I might be doing more fill-in work this summer. I did a lot for when Jim Richards was off last summer, and he gets a lot of time off because he's been here for about 300 years. So he's got lots of vacation. So I think I'll be on during the summer, I would say, quite a bit. I'd like to think so. And, of course, this show is back to its normal rhythm every Friday from 9 till 10. What do you need to know? What's the place to be? And if you miss it, obviously you're insane and need psychiatric help. But you can always download the podcast at vinnywhite.co.uk. And Vinny is spelled rather peculiarly, V-I-N-N-E-Y, white.co.uk. And you can subscribe in iTunes. You can put a poster up of me on your bedroom wall, right? And when you're doing it, you can look at it. I would do that if you have problems in dragging it out. You know what I mean? It will keep the wolf firmly from the door. That's what I'm saying. If the Viagra's too good, use a Vinny to slow you down. So I'd like to hear from you if you have customs and immigration stories, and if it's, is it just me that gets a hard time every time I cross the states? Is it just me that they think is absolutely convinced on moving to the United States of America and setting up a life with my illegal immigrant Mexican wife? I don't think so. Not from the texts I'm getting. I'm a security guard and they always give me a hard time at US customs. Nowadays, I try not to fly over. I find it easier when you drive, says one person. Someone else says, they're so mean. They took my orange away. I was in uniform to flight attendant in Florida, and all I was doing was crossing the border with an orange. Orange thieves. They gave me a hard time. I'd love to be there for that. Yeah. Ma'am, is that an orange?
Yeah.
Come with me. I was in Nicaragua last week and the last few weeks, and I had a motorbike, and someone just texted me and said, Your motorbike disaster story of riding into the ocean was pretty good. Listen, I've got one better than that. Do you want to hear the be-all and end-all of my motorbike accidents? It's amazing I'm still here, to be honest. Riding a motorbike in Nicaragua is possibly rather foolish, but tell you what, so much fun. So much. Oh, the feeling of freedom. Oh, pure joy, scintillating and pumping through every cell in my body, but it was somewhat dangerous. It's battle of the fittest on the roads of Nicaragua. I say the roads. We could pop that in inverted commas for a start. They're not really roads. On the tracks of Nicaragua. I think the worst moment I had was, and it was quite nasty actually. I arrived in Granada, which is a beautiful old Spanish colonial town on the shore of a giant lake, Lake Nicaragua. Gorgeous country. If you're thinking of going, please do. And I had some Irish friends that I'd met along the road. And they'd written down the hostel that they were staying in. And it was stuck on a post-it note to the front of my bike over the speedometer because it didn't work. And if it did work, it's pretty irrelevant, really. I think the speed restriction in Nicaragua goes something like this. Whatever you can do, my friend. Whatever you can do. So I had this post-it note, which was on my console of my technologically advanced motorbike, which was $400. Suzuki 100, if you're wondering. Beautiful blue. Deep. And I unfortunately it blew off as I drove into the town. Now, despite the fact I knew what was on the post-it note and I knew the name of the hostel, I felt bad littering, even though it was a country that's full of litter.
So I thought, I'm just going to stop the bike and I'll go and get it. Because I was only going like 2 or 3 miles an hour. I stop, and as with all situations, when you stop a motorcycle, you have to put your foot down. So I put my foot down, and it just kept going. And it was at that point I realised that I'd put my foot into a 3-foot storm drain that was covered in grass. Now, what happens in that situation is you just wait. There's nothing you can do. And you know that you're going down, and you know that the weight of the motorbike is going down with you. And you just hang on in there. The eternity that it takes to fall off a motorcycle when you're waiting for your hip to crunch into the ground is really quite preposterous. I landed with all of my weight and the motorcycle's weight on one part of my hip. Of course it was the bony bit. Sweet Lord, the pain was unbelievable. I nearly passed out, but I am a bit of a girl. No offence, girls. And this is a great thing about living down there for a little while. The assistance, people running from all over the place to try and help me up. Guy comes up, helps me pick my motorbike up, picks me up. I'm on the floor. I'm nearly in tears. I'm hanging on to this road sign. And doesn't he fall down the hole? My knight in shining armor fell down the same hole as me. And you know what? If it was here, you'd sue the city for having the most ridiculous, you know, system ever. And you'd win the case. You can't have a 3.5-foot hole covered in grass anywhere around here. I know the potholes are bad, but they're not that bad. And as for there, you want a lawsuit in Nicaragua? Good luck, sweet cakes. If you can find a judge, he's going to have a good chuckle when you tell him that story, but he ain't going to do anything. So, yeah, you just have to watch where you're going all the time. That was my experience. I still have a hip, which I like to think of as somewhere between aqua and deep purple. It's gorgeous. I'll give you a quick flash of my arse on the webcam. What's that? You're turning your computer off? Oh, I see your point. There you go. Give me your stories. We're going to take one more cheeky little break. And we've got so much to do in 8 minutes. I don't even know if we can do it, but we'll do our best. 416-872-1010. Give us a shout. We'll be back in a minute.
You're tuned in to the Vinnie White Show on In-Depth Radio, News Talk 1010.
Pull your phone out. Give us a text. 71010 is the number. It's always nice to hear from you. Do it. I got a new phone. I had to. I'm not one to keep up with the Joneses, but I did get an iPhone 5, much to my chagrin. I was away and I decided it would be a good idea to live the life that I've always wanted to live. I had a waterproof bag. I put my previous phone, my iPhone 4, in the waterproof bag with a cigar, a bottle of beer and some speakers, and I swam out to an island and I was going to set it up, put some tunes on, smoke a cigar, living the dream. Turns out it wasn't a waterproof bag. There's your issue. So, end of phone. So I've now reluctantly got a new iPhone. Apple love me. I'm that guy. I hate them for who they are and the fact that everything's so expensive. But I just keep going back. Like a weird, battered wife. It's really weird. I hate them, but I love them. All right, so what was I going to talk about? Oh, yeah, that was it. Canada, I love you and I want to have your babies. I hope that's not too much. I just think you're funny. Do you know how much... I know I keep bashing the Americans, but screw it. It's true. Do you know how much funnier you are than America? I love you. Every time I met someone with a North American accent down in Nicaragua, which is every 5 minutes, and they were funny, they were Canadian. And you know, the other thing that amazes me is... I met as many Canadians as Americans. That shouldn't be the case. I should have met 10 times less. You love a travel, don't you? And who can blame you? Because it was crappy here. So I just want to reconfirm my love and let you know that I will be staying for the rest of the year, off and on. I'll probably take a little trip home at some point. But I nearly fell out with you, and I've fallen deeply back in love with you, Canada. And if I could, I would hold you close. And I would perform a mild and definitely not wrong sexual act. Pushing it? I think I'll just stick with I love you. But you've been great. And I want to thank all the Canadians I met along the way for making me laugh. And what a great bunch. Travelling Canadians are doing you proud. If ever you're wondering how the attitude of this country is being perceived by others in various parts of the world, doing you proud. Everyone I met with, everyone Canadian obviously has the mandatory maple leaf on their backpack. And what a bunch of great people. So well done. Did annoy me a little bit that when I was down there, even though I'm not in Canada, they still confuse me with an Australian. And the more blonde I got and the more tanned I got, the more confused they got. And so I thought it would be a good opportunity now to set this rather boring record straight. I'm going to explain to you, if I may be so bold, with some assistance, what a British accent is. So let's get this cleared up for once and for all. First of all, there's no such thing as a British accent. I know. Yes, I know. It depends where you're from in Britain. So Britain is already Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland and England. And within those countries, of course, you have enormous amounts of variation within the accents. So I've been searching desperately to try and conclude as to what a British accent is. Being that there isn't one in particular, wouldn't it be great if we could demonstrate the range? And then that way, if you bump into a guy that's a bit like me when you're travelling, you don't say, oh, you're obviously Australian, because it does piss us off. I've got nothing against the Aussies, and I'm sure the Aussies have got nothing against me, but there's a huge distinction between the accents, and I'd love you to learn it. So I thought this might be helpful. This is the range of British accents, so in future, you can spot a Brit. All right? Here we go.
Received pronunciation is the great communicator. As soon as you deviate from that and you go into London speech, for example, then you lose a little bit of the communication. Cockney is based on East Anglian, Suffolk, Norfolk, Cambridgeshire. This is often by actors confused with the West Country, where the R's come in and then you get Dorset and Somerset, get into Cornwall. Devon's slightly different. It goes into the nose a bit more like that. Then you go up north to Yorkshire. It's nice if you get a word that's got one of the predominant sounds in it, like Yorkshire. Then you cross the Pennines into Lancashire, where it gets much more flexible and fluid in the mouth. Liverpool is there too, you know, it's Scouse. It's a mixture of all kinds of sounds. One of those is Northern Irish with the raising inflections, but you don't get the raising inflections down in Dublin, where it has that poetic quality, which is sometimes thought of as being not different from Highland speech, which is also quite poetic and almost Scandinavian. And then you come down to Glasgow and into the lowlands of Scotland, where you get glottal stops and things like that. And then you come down the west coast and you're in Wales, North Wales, where it's breathy like that, and down into South Wales, where you get much heavier, and Welsh people who sometimes even sound a bit drunk.
Fantastic. So I found that on YouTube. He's a voice actor, unsurprisingly. And he's in one take there, without any editing whatsoever, managed to cruise around the whole of Britain. And I thought it was quite a talent, and one that I would like to mimic, but would absolutely, definitely not do a very good job of. So next week, we're back at the same time, 9 o'clock through till 10 o'clock. My name is Vinnie White. You can find me online, vinniewhite.co.uk. It's always a pleasure. It's never a chore. You can follow me if you want on the old Facebook. Vinnie White is the name. I think that's all we need to know for the minute, isn't it? Yeah. Thanks for getting in touch with all your stories and all your tales. It's good to be back. I'll speak to you soon, all right? Take care.